as the residents of Jerusalem worked to rebuild their city walls. After much thinking and prayer and planning on the part of Nehemiah, who'd come from the palace himself, they found that as they made good progress, closing in the entire area and building it to half its height, great angst was in the part of those in the cities around them who were making themselves enemies. They began to intimidate them, making fun of them, to discourage them to give up the work and not finish it. And as we learned last week, it's so easy to be deterred, discouraged from the good work God has placed before us because of people in our lives who say, no, you're wrong. You can't. Forget about that. We've all faced that discouragement. But yet, they looked to God for help and carried on. And just like any project that begins to pick up steam as it goes, they found themselves facing a different challenge that went beyond just discouragement. Hear the word of the Lord from Nehemiah chapter 4, beginning at verse 6. So we rebuilt the wall till all of it reached half of its height, for the people worked with all their hearts. But when Sanballat, Tobiah, the Arabs, the Ammonites, and the men of Ashdod heard that the repairs to Jerusalem's walls had gone ahead and that the gaps were being closed, they were very angry. They all plotted together to come and fight against Jerusalem and stir up trouble against it. But we prayed to our God and posted a guard day and night to meet this threat. Meanwhile, the people in Judah said, "The strength of the laborers is giving out, and there's so much rubble, we cannot rebuild the wall." Also, our enemies said, "Before they know it or see us, we will be right there among them and will kill them and put an end to their work." Then the Jews who lived near came and told us 10 times over, "Wherever you turn, they will attack us." Therefore, I stationed some of the people behind the lowest points of the wall at the exposed places, posting them by family groups with swords, spears, and bows. After I looked things over, I stood up and said to the nobles, the officials, and the rest of the people, "Don't be afraid of them. Remember the Lord, who is great and awesome. And fight for your brothers, your sons, your daughters, your wives, and your homes." When our enemies heard that we were aware of their plot and that God was frustrating it, we all returned to the wall, each to his own work. And from that day on, half of my men did the work while the other half were equipped with spears, shields, bows, and body armor. The officers posted themselves behind all the people of Judah who were building the wall. Those who carried materials did their work with one hand and held a weapon in the other. And each of the builders had his sword at his side as he worked. But the man who sounded the trumpet stayed with me. And then I said to the nobles, the officials, and the rest of the people, "The work is extensive and spread out, and we are widely separated from each other along the wall. So wherever you hear the sound of the trumpet, join us there. Our God will fight for us." So we continued the work, with half of the men holding spears from the first light of dawn till the stars came out. And at that time, I also said to the people, "Have every man and his helper stay inside Jerusalem at night so that they can serve as guards by night and workmen by day. Neither I nor my brothers nor my men nor the guards with me took off our clothes. Each had his weapon, even when he went for water." This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. I can't help but notice that as the tension builds, now threats of harm, threats of murder to stop this work become the next intense press back against the good thing that God is building up. Whenever we're about building up or doing something God has given us to, we can almost guarantee that the pressure against it will intensify and intensify. So finds Nehemiah and his band of willing, though somewhat untalented workers, doing the good work as God has given them. But I'd like to suggest that at three critical points in the story we've just heard again now, there are three moments where God comes into the picture, and that makes all the difference. The first one is when the threats are made. Sanballat, Tobiah, the Arabs, and the Ammonites are on every side. You see, Sanballat was living in Samaria. He was somehow an exarch, some kind of a leader official of some kind. Samaria was just north, the area north of where Jerusalem was. The Ashdodites lived on the coast to the west of where Jerusalem was. At this point in history, a group of Arab peoples had been moved, actually, by a previous invasion south between them and Egypt. And so the Arabs lived on the south side of the Negev that goes down from Jerusalem down toward the Sinai Peninsula. And then, of course, Tobiah, being an Ammonite, the people who lived on the east side. So all of these neighbors, all the way around the city, are not thrilled about this work. They're literally surrounded by those who want it stopped. It's a hard thing to be surrounded by people who do not share your God-given goals. And as Nehemiah feels it, he says the first thing we did was pray to our God. And then we posted a guard. Isn't that interesting? I would have expected that they would have posted a guard first and then prayed that the guard never saw anything. No. The first thing they do is look to God. God, you hear their threats. You know how serious this is. You know what level of intentionality they have about this. We don't. We're just getting it secondhand. But you see what they're doing. And there is nothing on the earth that escapes your notice. Oh God, if you've brought us here and you've brought us to start this, surely you will help us to stop. Finish it. Pray first. How easy it is to think God helps those who do themselves. You post the guard, you set it up, you fix the problem, and God will bless that. No. It is true God wants us to be engaged, but it starts with his intervention because he may just slightly redirect us. Sometimes we think we know what the plan is, but we haven't prayed our way all through it. We see a good thing, we want to do that good thing, but we say, God, here's my plan. Now, I'm doing it. You should see. I mean good. I mean, my heart's coming from a good place, so make this successful. No. Nehemiah says, God, you know what's going on and what's going to happen next. Even if it leads to bloodshed, God forbid it. We'll post a guard, but we turn to you because you are the true guard. You are the only one who never misses an approach. Yeah. Sometimes we got to pray through. Speak to God. And that might be point number one. Speak to God. When we feel fear coming upon us because of what's coming down at us, over us, or at us, pray to God. And yes, do your part. Faith plus works equals power. Faith plus works is alive. Faith plus works is what God blesses. And indeed, he's given us strength to do our part. Then comes the triple threat. Words of discouragement again in the form of threats. First, the Judeans, people who live right next to the city and some of them inside its walls. We're weary. We've put up so much wall. There's so much rubble, so much part of the limestone that's been broken down that can't even be used. It's hard to sort through it all and find pieces. You know how long it takes to find good pieces? We've salvaged everything we can from the broken walls from 100 years ago. How much more are we going to recycle material here? We just feel like we're putting up chalk. This is ridiculous. The workers are discouraged. The workers are afraid that their work will be shoddy, that it won't go well. So why should we even continue with this? And then there come those words from the enemy. We'll surprise you. We'll attack you. We'll be right there at the weakest spots when you least expect it, maybe under the cover of night, or maybe unnoticed because you're so far spread out from each other. But we're coming. Be ready. We will kill you. And then the third threat, from the Jews who lived in the neighboring towns away from and outside of, who came by 10 times over the verse saying it, again and again, you know, did you know they're coming? Did you know they're going to take you? Did you know they're going to send an army against you? Yeah, we got it. Don't tell me again. It's too much to take. I don't want to hear it an 11th time. Yeah. These are tough things. These are tough threats. But notice the response. Verse 14, remember the Lord. Remember? Really? What does that mean? Ah, but here is a deep and rich word. Remember the works of the Lord and how he's done to deliver his people time and time again. Maybe hearing the words remember would remind them of things they'd heard from stories of their ancestors who God had protected, like David, who was on the run, a fugitive from the king he had served faithfully and never tried to do anything wrong to, living indeed in Gaza, not far from the Ashdodites themselves, who were out to kill every Jewish person they could find. And David found himself living in the city of one of these peoples, surrounded by his enemies, as he would write in some of the Psalms we have in our Bible even now. Oh God, my enemies surround me on every side, but you deliver me. You break the jaw of my oppressor. You loosen the bonds of those that imprison me. Yes, maybe they'd remember that David had also been surrounded by enemies, but he had been delivered. Or maybe they would remember the story of Hezekiah, king on the throne in this very city 200 years ago, when it had been completely surrounded by Sargon's troops from Assyria, saying, "We will crush down this glorious wall, and we will kill you all." And in the midst of that frightful horror, walled up in a city they could not get out of, King Hezekiah prayed, "Oh God, only you can help us." And God did. And the very next day, word came from Sargon's capital, from Assyria's capital, that the troops were being recalled and they had to leave right now. There was a national emergency back in their country. And phew, they were gone. Remember, Nehemiah says, remember how God has even delivered this city 200 years ago by making every enemy who was at the gate gone within 24 hours. That's what God does. Remember what he's done before, because he's a very reliable God. He's the same yesterday, today, and forever. And the things that he's done before, he loves to do again, to reveal his faithfulness, to show his power. Remember the Lord. And not just remember, but remember two things about this God. And there are two words that are used in verse 14. God is great. That word just falls off our lips. It's such a generic word. Oh, that was great. That was a great sandwich I had last Tuesday. You're such a great person. I'm glad to know you. We've evaporated all of the depth of meaning of this word. But the original word that Nehemiah is saying to his people right then, God is great. We even sang about it this morning. Great and mighty is he. What does that mean? To the ancients who heard it, great meant God is like a force that's burgeoning and cannot be stopped. A force that is appearing small but can't be ripped out or removed at all. It's kind of like trying to pull out a tree out of the ground by hands when it's 4 years old. It might be this tall, but if you grab a hold of it and you jerk with all your might, I guarantee you won't get it out because it is great. It is great in depth and rootage, and it is strong, and it will not be stopped. My grandparents had a giant tree in the back of their house. And one year they decided they were done with the tree, and they took a chainsaw and leveled it to right about here. And I was so grieved because that wasn't the way I remembered their house. Don't change that. I hate that. You're a love person that I want to go, and I want things to be just like they always were. Do you want that too? When you go visit your homeland or your parents' house or your grandparents' property, don't you hate it when they've changed it or they've torn down a tree or they've done something different? It just takes the memory, the vision, the smell of the place, and just alters it forever. But after they leveled that tree, on the side of the tree, there started to grow this knob of another branch. It grew, and they let it grow for the next several years until finally it was at almost half the height of the original stump. And I was so glad. Oh, but they mowed it over too. But the word means great. God is great, and he will not be stopped. He will just keep growing and strengthening and filling out the space in ways that he does, regardless of the forces that are against him. Don't you recognize the dream that you're building, the things that you're trying to do for God and for his kingdom? They're things that are unstoppable, that cannot be put off. No matter who else around you threatens to destroy it, he will be great within it. Remember the Lord who is great, and the next word that you find there is awesome, or the word terrible in some translations. Now, in the Old English, terrible didn't mean what it means today, like when a three-year-old screams and lays on the floor and has a fit, which is terrible, and I hate that when it happens in a public place. Makes me embarrassed for the parents who have to endure that kind of insanity, but it happens. And that's not what it means, terrible twos or terrible threes or terrible fits that we may go through. This word means awesome. It means the God who is the one real source and the real right source of fear. Those who come against us may attempt to intimidate us by fear, but let's realize that there is nothing they can do compared to the one whose very presence invokes fear of all creation and shakes it to its core. Fear, rightly placed, is placed in this awesome God who is so terrible that even when he comes down on Mount Zion, the people say, "No, no, please, don't let us see him. We can't handle it. It's too much for us. It's terrible to see." God is indeed terribly awesome. And when he comes, it is a power and a sense of certainty that cannot be put off and is almost too frightening to endure. Don't be afraid of those who threaten you, those who cause you grief and trouble, those who make you worry about the future, no matter how dire their predictions. They're not worth fear. God is the awesome, terrible, fearful one whose opinion, whose presence, whose longing for us must shake us to our core. Remember the Lord who is great and awesome. In these words, Nehemiah speaks not just to the Lord in prayer, but of the Lord to others. The way we overcome fear is to first of all speak to the Lord and then to speak of the Lord. Yeah, your reality is that this is going to fall apart. Your reality is that the climate is going to destroy us all and the planet's going to cave in. Your fear is that these eternal deficits are going to destroy our country and ruin our economy. Your fear is that you're going to pick a leader who's completely inconsistent and a liar. Your fear is that everything's going to be worse next year because of the choices we're making now. Well, let me tell you what real fear is. Fear is being on the wrong side of what God wants to do. That's what you should be afraid of. The rest of it is pittance compared to his desire. Oh, but how much we vex ourselves about we've got to fix and what securities and who needs to get in there and what needs to happen next so that we can feel safe and not afraid. And God says, don't waste your emotional energy it doesn't really matter. I will do what I will do regardless of what the leaders around you say they'll do or actually do. Sometimes we need to speak not just to the Lord, but of the Lord, who rules from on high. Great and mighty is He. Great His reality that comes upon us, whether or not there's an election tomorrow. Great is the future kingdom He's building, regardless of who's taking your piece of it away. And nothing will stop that from happening. Then there's one more piece. In verse 20, as Nehemiah watches all the safety, comforting measures he can think of to put out for the people, to quell their fears of attack and being killed, a trumpet. There should be a trumpet. And the trumpeter will stay with me. And if we see any trouble or problem at all, any fear or discouragement begin to overtake, I'll say to the trumpeter, sound the trumpet. And we'll gather together from wherever you hear the sound coming, move in that direction, and we'll be together. And as we are, God will fight for us. That's the plan. And the words about God here are, God will fight for us. There's a drill. There's a sound. There's a new thing that draws us together. For as we draw together, and as a trumpet was meant to be an instrument that called God's people to worship from the beginning, a trumpet was an instrument that said, gather here, because when we come together, God will meet us here, and we will be under His wing. How right of you to call a trumpeter, Nehemiah. That when we gather to worship God, He promises to be with us and to do things, to show us things, and to lead us forward confidently in ways not happening when we're by ourselves. God bless you for being here today. Indeed, God blesses you for being here today. Indeed, God clears some of the smoke away and some of the fear away because you've been in this house today, because we've heard the stories. We've remembered our God, who is great and awesome. We've heard the sound. We've sung in worship to God. And indeed, as we do, a new reality is created. Not the reality we create at our jobs, not the reality we create with our children and our family members, not the reality of those who lead us, not the reality of the political leaders, not the reality of our economic and what our bank statement tells us. It's a reality that goes beyond all of those because we see things as they truly are and always will be. Together, we shall always be with the Lord. And He will supply our every need. And the vision of the end of all things becomes just a touch clearer, and we see through the veil just a little farther because we recognize in these moments of gathered worship that God is creating that future. Whom shall I fear? Before I finish the final piece of the sermon, I couldn't help but think of that song, "The God Who Goes Before Me, Who Makes a Way, helps me to say, where is my fear placed? What is it I fear? Who am I fearing? What are the things in my future that I fear? Is it some examination I'm facing in school? Is it some relationship I'm afraid will fall apart and leave me helpless, hopeless, and alone? Is it some economic job that I'll lose and cause a crisis of life of huge proportions?" Musicians are coming. I'm going to invite us to sing this song, even as you remain seated, before we go on for our last little bit. Musicians, please come now, and let us sing together the song, a newer song, a contemporary worship song, "Whom Shall I Fear?"
call. You are my morning song. Though darkness fills the night, it cannot hide the light. Who shall I fear? You crush the enemy underneath my feet. You are my sword and shield. Though troubles linger still, whom shall I fear? I know who goes before me. I know who stands behind. The God of angel armies is always by my side. The one who reigns forever, he is a friend of mine. The God of angel armies is always by my side. My strength is in your name, for you alone can save. You will deliver me. Yours is the victory. Whom shall I fear? Whom shall I fear? I know who goes before me. I know who stands behind. The God of angel armies is always by my side. The one who reigns forever, he is a friend of mine. The God of angel armies is always by my side. And nothing formed against me shall stand. You hold the whole world in your hand. Holding on to your promises. You are faithful. You are faithful. And nothing formed against me shall stand. You hold the whole world in your hands. I'm holding on to your promises. You are faithful, you are faithful, you are faithful, you are faithful. I know who goes before me, I know who stands behind. The God of angel armies is always by my side. The one who reigns forever, he is a friend of mine. The God of angel armies is always by my side. I know who goes before me. I know who stands behind. The God of angel armies is always by my side. The one who reigns forever, he is a friend of mine. The God of angel armies is always by my side. The God of angel armies is always by my side.
Indeed, what hope there is in this. To know that God is with us by our side, and respite of the other realities that speak to us even 10 times over, our fear is placed in the one who is awesome and is worthy to motivate us in every good way toward the good work he's given us to do. And no matter how much rubble there may be around you, no matter how many people have told you this isn't realistic, no matter how many other things vie for attention, God desires that we not be silenced or paralyzed or implode because of fear.
The day before she died, I went with Grant to visit Norma in her room at Shepherd Lodge. And as we went down to visit her, she was nearly gone. For several weeks, her lungs had been breaking down, and she was on oxygen, and it wasn't going to be long. And we wanted to make the most of every moment that was left. And in all the recesses of things that had been taken away from Alzheimer's, that horrendous form of dementia, little bits and pieces of just things learned long ago, things remembered from far before, still motivated movement of the slightest kind. And I thought about fear, and even the fear we have of being in a state like that, don't we? And I thought about the fear that Grant has been living with for 3 or 4 years as his health breaks down, hoping that she goes first so that there's someone to at least make good decisions for her because they have no children. I've watched how that fear has vexed him. And in each of the visits I made to them both, I prayed that God would give me words to say, "Be not afraid. The Lord knows what you need." And so on Tuesday, as we sat at her bedside, I thought maybe this 23rd Psalm would have words from long ago remembered for many of her generation, and you memorized it as children. And just like Alzheimer's, the things we've had the longest are the last things to go. "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want." We got to the part where it says, "Though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death," knowing that we're right on the cusp of that shadow, there was more movement in her and responsiveness. I thought about the fear of death and how troubling that is, especially for those who find themselves on the backside of life. But there was the promise that you prepare a place for me and that you deliver me, just like David was praying when he was with his enemies, and now was true almost for her. And I think we were glad as we prayed for the fear being rightly placed. On Thursday, I checked back in because the day that she passed and she was gone Wednesday night. But Thursday, I came back and visited with him. And it struck me how different he was. It was like fear had lifted. The fear of not being clear enough and strong enough to see her through these last days had just evaporated. And he was responsive, and he was light, and he was talkative, and he was positive. Not what I expected from someone who had just lost their spouse of 49 and a half years, but yet I understood exactly what had happened here. The God who is great and awesome had delivered him from fear, and God had answered our prayers, and she had gone before. What a beautiful thing it is when fear is lifted from us and it is rightly placed. And I think the question for us today is this: where is fear in your life? Like Brother Grant, is it over the security of just getting through and having enough money to make it to the end goal? Is it the fear that our child will never come back to God and there is nothing we can do to stop that? Is it a fear that something dreadful will happen in our world and it will be unrecoverable? Is it a fear that we'll end up being just like the very people in our lives we've tried so hard to be different from? Because here's the deal. When that fear is lifted and it is placed on the one who alone can carry it well and can use it as a source of life and not a source of death, everything changes. It may take several days to figure out what you're really afraid of, because we bury it so deep we don't even recognize it sometimes ourselves. But I want to urge you from this day and the next day and the next day, and as we walk toward this departure of our sister who is restored, hallelujah, in God's presence, and whose mind and wit are just as quick as they were back in the day now, and who is comforted that she's come through the valley of the shadow of death, and that she has learned that there is nothing to fear, even in a helpless, shadowy state like Alzheimer's, that God is faithful. I want to invite you to consider what you're afraid of in the next few days. And as we have this funeral on Wednesday, and we also grieve that our sister Avis Burnett passed away on Friday. I just learned this morning. I had no idea. We've lost two of our dear sisters in 1 week. Such is October and November. This is not unusual. And we grieve for our loss. But at the same time, it reminds us of where fear is rightly placed. In the God who is able to deliver us every day of our lives into his presence. How beautiful it will be as we learn to let go of fear and let it be done in our hearts. I think we should take a moment to sing and to express ourselves to God. In light of this message about the fear factor and what it means to re and rightly place fear, I'm going to ask you to stand, and we're going to sing a song, He is Able. He is able to accomplish all that concerns me, all that fears me, all that incites me today. And as we sing it, if you need to talk to God about what he surfaced in you that you know you're afraid of, that is of human origin and will fail, come and speak to him in a place like this and find, like Brother Grant has found this week, he is able to lift and move that fear to where it rightly belongs. And you can go from this place with a new sense of lightness and a new sense of power that God is with you. God is great and terrible. Remember the Lord. The Lord will fight for you. Rally to him. Speak to him. Oh, Nehemiah, you said it so well. Why should we labor it any further? Let us sing together.